that sermons are difficult, so I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one that caught that. They are. I have a 2-year-old. Trust me, sermons are difficult. It's good to be together. We're continuing our series through Matthew 9. As I've stated before, this is one of my favorite chapters in all of the Bible. It's a beautiful picture that we're presented here of who Jesus is and what Jesus' ministry is about and what he is calling his followers and his disciples to be. And so we've been tracing over the course of this chapter as Jesus just lays out these stories that we're supposed to then take and internalize and learn to emulate. So we're going to continue today as we look at this story of these two women. That patient is TFG. Now, I heard that phrase and others like it while I was working in the ER in Kansas City as a chaplain. And it was simply a code or a phrase that one of the nurses would give to another one, or maybe to a doctor or an orderly, usually with sadness or frustration, and oftentimes muttered under their breath. And it took me forever to figure out what they were talking about. TFG, because it's not traditional medical terminology. It's not a phrase I've ever heard. I've never seen those letters put together. And it also threw me because all the patients were incredibly different. They all had different presenting problems. They had different tests that were run, and they all had different outcomes. And I had never heard that phrase outside of that hospital before. And so finally, one night, I just stopped one of the nurses who said it, and I said, okay, I'm lost. Can you tell me what you mean by TFG? And so she kind of like looked around for a second, made sure no one else was there, and then she told me, essentially, it means this: that patient is too far gone. And sometimes it was in reference to their inebriated state, whether from drugs or alcohol. Sometimes it was the fact that they came in night after night hoping to find a different doctor presenting different symptoms simply because they wanted to get more pain medication. Sometimes it was about their prognosis going forward, that there wasn't a whole lot of hope. And no matter what we can do for them, this phrase was saying, they are too far gone. Nothing's going to work right now, or for some of them, not ever again. And that was always a very hard phrase to hear. TFG, that designation is tough because it tells us that things are now out of our control. There is absolutely nothing we can do. The case is too difficult. The condition is too advanced. They're not responding to our treatments. There's nothing more that we can do for that person. And I've been there a number of times afterwards as people received that devastating news, hopefully presented in terms that weren't like TFG. But they were getting that terrible diagnosis, or after learning that the person that they loved had just died. And every situation like that was different, and every response was unique. But they all carried a sense of helplessness and hopelessness because those circumstances were out of their control. Things for them at that moment seemed way too far gone. And today's stories center around two individuals whose situations seem hopeless. They're the very definition of TFG. There is no cure for their infirmity, except maybe, just maybe, they think, if we could get to Jesus, maybe there's something that he can do. And Matthew's story begins with these words, while he was saying this. For Matthew, this story flows directly out of the story that came before, the story that we looked at last week. It's taking place at the exact same time. It's a story in which Jesus is talking with people who say, why don't you fast? Why don't you fast and your followers fast like we do? And it's probably taking place at the same time he's sitting down with sinners and tax collectors. And he's saying, we don't fast right now because people are meant to experience joy and the presence of God. It's like being with the bridegroom at his wedding feast. And we in our Bible separate them out and put these little headings in there. But for Matthew, while these stories are distinct, they are all parts of the same whole. They're all intertwined. Because as he uses these words while he was saying these things, he's calling us back. He's asking us to think back on the idea that Jesus presented to them just before, that Jesus has come for the physically and the spiritually sick. He has come to be a great physician for them. And he then presents us with these two healing stories. And today's stories center around some relatively hopeless situations: a dead young girl and a distraught, faithful father. and a woman with a debilitating disease. And these stories are paralleled in Mark chapter 5 and in Luke chapter 8 with greater detail. But Matthew does something interesting here. Mark and Matthew go into long discussions about who these people were and what their lives were like and what that journey to see them was. But Matthew gives us essentially that Joe Friday dragnet style approach to the information that he wants in the story. He cuts away all the extemporaneous details and information just to get to the heart of the story. For Matthew, it's all about the facts. And so Matthew starts like this. While he was saying this, a synagogue leader came and knelt before him and said, "My daughter has just died, but come and put your hand on her and she will live." Jesus got up and went with him, and so did his disciples. And we start with a story about the synagogue leader, a man who is used to being in control and in a position of power. Mark and Luke tell us that his name is Jairus, and he's one of the main leaders of the synagogue in the area. Luke tells us he is distraught and he's pleading with Jesus because this is his only daughter. This is somebody who's probably had him wrapped around his finger since he was born. And now at the age of 12, she is about to die. And the father's love for his daughter compels him to go running out and in search of Jesus, just asking him and begging him to come and help. And both Mark and Luke tell us that this daughter is in the last moments of her life. She's still living, but her situation is hopeless and she's too far gone. There's nothing outside of a miracle that could ever help her. And so the man came seeking a miracle worker, the one that people said might just be the long-awaited Messiah. But Matthew does something interesting here with this story. While Mark and Luke tell us that the girl is about to die, Matthew tells us she's already dead. She is too far gone and it's going to happen, and the dad doesn't mince any words. He's going with reality here. He says, "My daughter is dead," but he also responds in faith, "But if you come and you put your hands on her, she will live." And that's an amazing statement of faith, isn't it? But what made Jairus think that Jesus could do this? To this point in his ministry, Jesus hasn't raised anyone back to life. He goes on to do that for two other individuals, but it's not something he has done yet. And many had proclaimed that Jesus was a great prophet in addition to being a great rabbi, and he had done lots and lots of other miracles. So Jairus maybe thought that Jesus could do like Elijah and Elisha and raise people from the dead, but he'd never seen it or heard it done before. But the man's faith here is clear. If you come, if you will just touch her, she will be healed. She will live. And so Jesus and his disciples drop everything and go with him. But on the way, Jesus encounters another helpless and hopeless individual. Just then, a woman who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years came up behind him and touched his cloak. She said to herself, "If I only can touch his cloak, then I will be healed." Again, Matthew has just given us the bare necessities of this story. Mark and Luke tell us that she has tried everything. She has seen every doctor. She's consulted every specialist. She's tried every treatment, from the ones that were normal to the ones that were experimental. She had spent a fortune bankrupting herself in the process, but she was only getting worse. And many speculate about this woman and her condition and her diagnosis, and we don't really have a clue, although people have guessed. But we can guess what her life was like. Because of her condition, she would have been considered socially and religiously unclean. And because of that, she couldn't go to synagogue. She couldn't go to worship. She couldn't sacrifice at the temple. And if this had happened before she had reached puberty, then she would have never gotten married. And if it had happened after she was married, then it quite possibly could have caused a divorce because she never could have conceived a child. She was debilitated by pain and it was only getting worse. And her life and her circumstances, she would have been a virtual leper. Sure, she's not carrying the disease, but the results are the same. Kept apart from everyone she knew and loved because of her condition. And so she would be lonely and outcast and stigmatized for her disease. She had an incurable disease, and she was a social pariah for it. This woman is helpless and hopeless, and nothing had worked and things were only getting worse. But suddenly she hears that Jesus is in town. A man who can work miracles and heal the sick. And she believes without ever having met him or heard him before. And she thinks, if I can just see him, if I can just get close, if I can just touch even just the tassels or the edge of his cloak, then I will be healed. And so she reaches out. And she touches tentatively and furtively. And she just barely grazes it. And again, Mark and Luke give us more details about what's happening here. But in Matthew, Jesus simply turns around and looks at her. Jesus stops, he turns, he looks at her, and he says, "Take heart, daughter. Your faith has healed you." And the woman was healed at that moment. Jesus stops once again to have compassion. Here is a woman who quite possibly had lost everything and everyone in her life. Yet Jesus looks at her with love and with care, and he calls her daughter. And I don't want us to skip over the word that's here, because unlike Jairus, no one had come to intervene for this woman. No one had come to her aid or called Jesus' attention to her. No one came to plead on her behalf. And she thought herself so lowly that the rabbi would never deign to speak to her if she had ever asked. But Jesus stops, he looks at her, and he calls her a name of love. He calls her his daughter. He uses the term of compassion, of familiarity, of family. And he boldly reaches out with his word and this name, and he touches her heart. And her faith heals her and makes her well. And then the story simply shifts again, and we continue on to the synagogue leader's house. Jesus enters in, he drives out the mourners who are there weeping over the girl's death, and he earns their ridicule by stating that she is only asleep. Now, the people that Jesus is talking to here aren't just the friends and family of that family, but they're also professional mourners who are hired for that moment to come and to make great and sorrowful noise so that everyone will know that someone in that family had been lost. Death was a time for loudness. And as Jesus comes in and drives them out, they have to be thinking, who does this man think that he is? We see dead people all the time. Trust us, we know the difference here. You tell me that this girl is asleep, I'm telling you this girl is gone. But Jesus makes everyone leave, except for the parents. They go into the room. He takes her by the hand and raises her up both out of the bed and back to life. And here's what's amazing to me throughout this entire story is that Jesus is willing to risk the ire of the Pharisees once again by intentionally acting in ways that they find abhorrent. As we start this story, Jesus is sitting down with a tax collector and his other sinful friends and having a meal with them, something that they find incredibly distasteful. And now Jesus allows himself once again to become ritually unclean through his interactions with other people. You see, if they could help it, Jewish people didn't touch corpses. That of their family, sure. Anyone else, absolutely not. Because touching a dead body would make someone unclean. And not only that, but this diseased woman was then also considered unclean because of her condition. Anything and anyone that she touched would also be considered defiled until it was cleansed from that association. Jesus is willing to break Jewish laws and customs and taboos for the sake of other people. He touches the dead, and he allows himself to be touched by the dying. Jesus is willing to become ritually unclean in order to make other people whole. And Jesus does this because of the faith of those involved in the story. The father knew that if Jesus could only touch his daughter, she would be healed. And the woman knew if she could only touch Jesus' cloak, that she would be healed. And indeed, many scholars call these stories of faith and not stories of healing, because Jesus is responding to the faith of those who are involved. And many of us, if we were standing in that crowd, would have looked at these individuals and said that they were TFG. They were too far gone. Their case is hopeless, and their cause is helpless. But Jesus is willing to step in to be the help and hope that they need. And this was true for the powerful synagogue leader, and for the outcast, diseased, and destitute woman. Both of them were important in the eyes of Jesus. Jesus called one his daughter, and he gave the other one his daughter back. Jesus gave hope and help to those in need. So I want us to stop and think for a moment. Do we ever look at people in our lives like they are too far gone? How do we respond to people when their case seems helpless and hopeless? How do we minister to those whose situation seems overwhelming? Because there are a lot of times when we don't know what to say or what to do. We're not sure how to respond or how to help. We look at people who are facing things like life-threatening illnesses or have struggled with addictions for years or wrestle with mental illness or emotional pain or distress, and we feel like there's nothing that we can do. So how can we help when a case seems too far gone? Or maybe I want us to put this more in perspective for us. Do we ever look at ourselves like we're too far gone? Do we ever think I in my own life am helpless and hopeless? Do we ever think, Jesus, you don't know my past. You don't know what I've done. You don't know the hurt, the pain, the shame, the guilt, the suffering. Just mix those together, I guess. My life is full of broken promises and broken relationships and broken hearts and broken dreams. I'm beyond help and beyond hope. Maybe in life you feel weighed down and defeated, like you've wasted years of your life and your entire fortune and have absolutely nothing to show for it. Or maybe you feel like the disease, whatever it is winning the battle. Or maybe you feel like you are close to death physically or emotionally or spiritually. But here's what's amazing. Jesus holds out hope. He tells us he came to be a doctor for the sick. He came to offer true life to its fullest extent. Jesus came to be a help for the helpless and provide hope for those who feel hopeless. In 2010, the Christian band Third Day released a song entitled Cry Out to Jesus. It was a song that was written to people in pain, those who were struggling with events in life that had weighed them down. And each verse is actually written with a specific person in mind. People that were affecting that songwriter's life at the time. And as he wrote these words, he pictured them in his minds and what he would want to say to them, what he wanted them to hear. And so the words of the song go like this: to everyone who's lost someone they love long before it was their time, you feel like the days you had were not enough when you said goodbye. And to all the people with burdens and pains keeping you back from your life, you believe that there's nothing and there is no one who can make it right. For the marriage that's struggling just to hang on, they've lost all their faith and love. They've done all they can to make it right again, and still, it's not enough. For the ones who can't break the addictions and chains, you try to give up, but you come back again. Just remember, you're not alone in your shame and in your suffering. To the widow who struggles with being alone, wiping the tears from their eyes. For the children around the world without a home, say a prayer tonight. When you're lonely and it feels like the whole world is falling in on you, you just reach out, you just cry out. Cry out to Jesus. Because there is hope for the helpless and rest for the weary, love for the broken heart. There is grace and forgiveness, mercy and healing. He'll meet you wherever you are. Just cry out to Jesus. Cry out to Jesus. No one is too far gone for Jesus. Whether it's disease or despair, loneliness or lostness, addiction or depression, or on the doorstep of death itself, no one is too far gone. And that doesn't necessarily mean that Jesus is going to provide physical healing in every circumstance we encounter, but it does mean that Jesus wants to offer up spiritual healing and rest and comfort and grace and mercy. And all we have to do is come to him and acknowledge our need. To come believing that Jesus will do what he says he will do, that he will provide forgiveness and grace and access to the grace of God. if we come with faith, if we're willing to allow Him to make us whole, if we can give Him our hearts and our lives and confession and repentance and baptism, then Jesus will come and save us, and He will make us whole and healed and hopeful. We will recognize the help of God that comes to those who feel helpless. We serve an amazing God, amen. We serve a God who provides that grace and that comfort in the person of Christ. And that grace is available to all, to anyone who's willing to say, I need it. If you're willing to say, I need you to come in and to change whatever it is in life, then God wants to do that. And so this morning we're going to offer a public time of invitation. If there's a way in which we as a church can pray for you to lift up some of the burdens that you have on your hearts, if there's anything that you need, just prayed for and acknowledged, or if you need somebody to rejoice with you in the great things that God has done, or if you say, I want to know more about who this God is and how to give my life to Him, anything that we can do, we want to do that for you. Or if you don't want to do that publicly, that's totally okay too. Feel free to grab somebody afterwards and say, this is what I'm needing. Can you help me in that way? We want to be a blessing to people wherever you are in life. There's a way we can do that publicly. Respond as we sing.